Hi, I'm Elisa Lamel, Legal Content Specialist for Cross Financial. On this episode of Elder Law Interviews, I'm joined by Elder Law Attorney Jennifer Coulter. Jennifer is a partner at Townsend, Alala, Coulter, and Clute, located in El Paso, Texas. While her practice is primarily focused in the field of elder law and Medicaid planning, her true passion lies in helping clients avoid and protect their assets from the Medicaid Estate Recovery Program. She is the current El Paso Probate Bar President and a member of NALA. In this interview, we'll be discussing what the Medicaid Estate Recovery Program is, how it works, and ways to avoid losing your assets to it. Hi, Jennifer. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
Of course. So I'm really excited to have you with us today because we're going to be talking about the Medicaid Estate Recovery Program. Some ways that clients can navigate it and avoid it altogether. So before we get too much further, first question I will throw to you, how do you define the Medicaid Estate Recovery Program and what it is?
The Medicaid Estate Recovery Program is a federally mandated program that is designed to try to recover from the assets of certain people who receive certain kinds of Medicaid benefits. That's the very, very thumbnail version of it, but it's not actually really fair to talk about it as a single thing. The federal government said, states, each of you must set up a Medicaid Estate Recovery Program. It must meet these minimum requirements, but it can be more expansive. So there's really a bunch of different Medicaid Estate Recovery Programs that all operate a little bit differently. The way I usually think of it is a program designed to discourage people from getting benefits that they need.
All right. So I guess, what are the assets that can be recovered by this program? And are they only recovering assets from the Medicaid applicant themselves, or can it be expanded beyond that?
That's an excellent question. Again, this is going to vary state by state. The federal rules say states, at a minimum, you must try to recover from probate assets. And a number of states have taken that limitation. So Texas, where I practice, and New Mexico, where my partner practices, both do it through probate estates. Probate assets are those assets that don't have a non-probate distribution. That's the most lawyer way of defining. But it's also correct. So assets like life insurance policies or bank accounts that you routinely put beneficiary designations on, those won't be probate assets if you've got a beneficiary designation. If you talk to people about the Medicaid Estate Recovery Program, clients, other attorneys, title companies sometimes, a lot of times what they will tell you is the state is going to take your home away. Honestly, that's the way a lot of our state representatives describe it to clients as well. But it's not really the home in most cases. It's the home because that's the big probate asset most people have. Now, that's the bare minimum that the federal government requires. You must at least try to claim from probate assets. But you can also try to claim from non-probate assets. And some states have really broad Medicaid estate recovery programs where they do try to recover from non-probate assets. So mostly that's going to be from the Medicaid recipient themselves. But there are a number of reasons that the state might not be able to recover immediately. One of the exceptions applies, for example, like you have a surviving spouse. So the Medicaid recipient dies, but their spouse survives them. Some states will try to trace the Medicaid recipient's assets through the estate of the surviving spouse. They can't claim the surviving spouse's own assets, but they may be able to trace the assets that belong to the Medicaid recipient and try to recover when the exemption, the surviving spouse, passes away. Not every state is like that. Many states have pretty liberal programs. Texas, for example, if you have a surviving spouse, that's it. They're done. They can't recover. But not every state is that way. So it's really important to make sure that you have good legal advice for your area and make sure that you're doing what you can to avoid recovery.
Okay, so you just mentioned that One way to avoid probate is to have a POD or transfer on death designations on your accounts. So do the recipients of those funds from the Medicaid applicant who are the beneficiaries of those accounts, are they required or obligated to pay the Medicaid reimbursement claim?
That's going to depend on the state. If they're a probate asset only state like Texas, then the answer is no, they are not going to have to pay those monies to the state. The state will send out a questionnaire that says something like, what assets did the Medicaid recipient have? And is there a probate anticipated? Sometimes it's easy to answer those questions incorrectly because you don't think the Medicaid recipient doesn't have bank accounts anymore because their interest ended when they died. And so it can be difficult to navigate that, and having a good attorney on hand to do it is really helpful. But not always. In those states where they've expanded the Medicaid estate recovery program to include non-probate assets, the beneficiaries may be compelled to turn those funds over. Yes.
So how is the amount that the Medicaid estate recovery program has a claim for? How do they generate that amount? And then is the family have a way of knowing if there's even going to be a claim?
That's an excellent question. The way that claim should be generated is based on the actual amount that the state paid out on behalf of the Medicaid recipient during the Medicaid recipient's lifetime, and then any claims they paid after the death of the Medicaid recipient. So each person should get essentially an invoice in the mail from the state saying, here's the amount we would like to collect. We'd like to collect $280,000. And here's what we paid it on. Here are the dates of service. Here are the fees that we paid for each of those dates. It's really important to look at those because they're not always correct. I once received a claim for $3 million. And I thought, I know how long this client was on Medicaid. I don't think it was $3 million that the state actually paid out. And when we got the more detailed invoice from them and looked through it, $3 million was what they were charged, but not what they actually paid. What they actually paid was somewhere closer to $300,000. And so making sure you review that is really important. That is kind of the first part. We should get that from the state after the person passes and make sure that we're looking through it. There is the way of knowing whether there's a claim or not kind of varies depending on where you are. For a lot of states, their Medicaid estate recovery program is operated by Health Management Systems, Inc., HMS, Inc. They go by some other names in some other states, but that's the big company that does it for a lot of states. They will usually send out something like a notice of intent to file claim in the mail to the person's house, or if they knew about a power of attorney, a guardian, or another family member, they will send it to them. And that questionnaire essentially says, hi, we're very sorry for your loss, but we would like to collect money from this person. Or this person's assets. If you don't have something like that, then the probate attorney or elder law attorney working with the family can reach out to the state's contractor or to the state's agency directly if the state is not one having a private contractor handle their Medicaid estate recovery program and ask, is there a claim? Here is the Medicaid recipient's name, the Medicaid recipient's social security number, and the Medicaid recipient's date of death. Sometimes that's really important to do to start timelines running as well. If you don't know, there's a bunch of questions to think about. Was the person in a nursing facility when they passed away? If so, mostly those are going to get paid for by Medicaid. Medicare is going to cap out at 100 days in a nursing facility. So if you're there for any longer than that, and often if you're there for less time than that, it's going to get covered by Medicaid. Is there a provider in the home? And if so, how many hours a week? Medicare is not going to cover a lot of attendant care services, they're going to cover mostly a physical therapist who can come in and do physical therapy for, you know, short periods of time, or they'll cover a nurse who can come in a couple of times a week and do vitals and that kind of thing. Medicaid is covering a lot of those services that are falling through the gaps of the rest of our healthcare system. So starting to think about those kinds of things, did they receive covered services, can kind of give you a starting place to figure out, should I be looking for this in the mail?
Okay. And so, and you mentioned a really good point I want to circle back on about the bill that you received for $3 million. Is it possible for families to object to the reimbursement claim that they get, or can they
absolutely
get lower? Okay.
Yeah. Oh, totally. And there's a lot of reasons to do that. Sometimes it's something like that. They included the amount that they were billed, but not the amount they actually paid. Sometimes it's, I had one that came to me with two different people's bills on it. So there were two different people with the exact same name and surprisingly similar, but not the same, Social Security numbers. And I ended up with invoices from both of them. And so we were able to go line by line and object to certain things and say, no, we're not paying that because that is not for this person. There are other ways that you can get that bill lowered as well, depending on your state rules. So Texas, for example, says, look, if the family spent a bunch of money maintaining the house so that it was still available as a part of the probate estate and therefore available for recovery, because the person went into a nursing home and didn't have the money to pay for it, for example, we'll let them reduce the amount owed based on that. So the family pays out $2,000 a year for property taxes and $500 a year for homeowners insurance and so on. We're going to add that all up and we're going to deduct it from the amount owed.
So if we're getting releases from the Medicaid Estate Recovery Program, does that mean that they're just not getting paid?
In general, if we're getting a release from the Medicaid Estate Recovery Program, it means we're not paying the MERP claim, but there are possibilities where we may still have to pay the state. So MERP is one statutory possibility for recovery, but there are others. If you have a self-settled special needs trust, this is a kind of trust that is generally established by someone who's under 65, who receives money and who, for some reason, they have excess resources and who also gets benefits. These aren't necessarily the same kind of benefits. This can be SSI Medicaid, which isn't generally covered under the Medicaid Estate Recovery Program. Because the statutory basis for that recovery is different, you may still have to pay that claim. If you're in one of the 17 or so states that have qualified income trusts, the ability to set up a qualified income trust requires a Medicaid payback provision. And so even if you're getting a release from recovery by the state, you may not be getting a release for those payments. Ditto the Medicaid compliance annuities, right? They must name the state of Texas or the state of wherever as the remainder beneficiary to be exempted. Even if you get a recovery claim exemption or release, you may still have to pay that claim unless you live in a state that has said essentially, we are going to decline to recover from those other assets. If you get a MERP claim release.
Okay. Interesting. So you had mentioned earlier as well about reaching out to the Medicaid third-party agency and following up with them if they're going to be filing a claim to start dates and to run the clock. How long should, from the time the Medicaid applicant passes until that claim is received, how long does Medicaid have to file that claim?
It varies state by state. The federal rules are silent on it, but each state has in their Medicaid Estate Recovery Program some timeline that the state has. For example, Texas has 30 days from the date on which MERP receives notice of the death of the Medicaid recipient to send out that notice of intent to file claims. Even where we have those really good timelines, though, there can be problems with it. So, for example, in Texas, I'm in a long-running disagreement with my agency about when that 30 days starts to run, who has to get the notice. So keep an eye out on the state regs for it, for those timelines. They can take a long time sometimes to come in. So it's important to keep an eye out for them, know whether or not it's likely to be happening to your person. And if it's possible, reach out directly to them to start that time clock running and to get more certainty.
Okay, terrific. That's really good information. All right, so the million-dollar question for you. How do we avoid assets being recovered by MERP in the first place?
That's a super good question. If you live in a probate-only state, Texas, New Mexico, et cetera, the important thing is don't have probate assets, right? So we will put beneficiary designations on the bank accounts, put beneficiary designations on the life insurance policies, and do either ladybird deeds or transfer on death deeds, depending on your state, to get the house transferring outside of the probate process. In some states where that's not the case, where you've got a bigger, expansive Medicaid estate recovery program that can recover from non-probate assets, we may look at doing certain other things. For example, we may transfer the home through a federal exception to transfer penalties, so that the person just doesn't own it at all. One of those exceptions, for example, is you can transfer the home to a child who has been living in the home for 2 years prior to the death of the Medicaid recipient. I'm sorry, prior to the institutionalization of the Medicaid recipient, and whose caregiving for that Medicaid recipient prevented them from needing to go into the nursing home. So, for example, daughter moves in with mom and dad to help take care of them. Daughters living there and taking care of them meant mom and dad were able to stay home when otherwise they would have needed to be institutionalized. But eventually, mom and dad do need to be institutionalized. If daughter's care lasted for at least 2 years, mom and dad can gift the house to daughter during life. It won't trigger any problems for the eligibility purposes. And then mom and dad don't own the home. They can't recover from it. So knowing what your state does and does not permit for how the program operates will make a big difference in how that works. But in all of the probate asset only states, and there's a push to make more states probate asset only states, in those states, don't have a probate estate at all.
Excellent. So, and also it's a huge benefit if you are in a probate only state. Do you know by chance how many states do have that expanded recovery?
I don't. In most states, the program costs more to operate in every given year than it recovers. And a lot of those states are the probate-only states, places like Texas, New Mexico, Hawaii. I think Massachusetts just shifted their program. But there are still some states that are holding on to a more rigid expansion view. They talk about it in very reasonable ways, right? Medicaid is an expensive program, and this helps fill those coffers so that more people can get Medicaid as time goes on. But what it does, even in the probate-only states, is scare people out of getting benefits. I've had a lot of people in my office say, I refuse to get benefits. We had a guy who came into our office and said, the state said that if I get these benefits, I will lose my home, and I can't lose my home, and I can't live without the benefits. I'm thinking about killing myself instead. And that is, first, just a terrifying thing for any person to say to you. Fortunately, we were able to say to him, no worries. There's no chance that the state's going to take your home in our case. And you can absolutely get the benefits to get the care you need. But that's a lot of what it's doing. And so we try to really push good information on people so that they know that this is generally pretty avoidable. And there is a push in Congress to try to eliminate the Medicaid estate recovery program entirely, We shall see how that goes, but maybe people should contact their congressman.
All right. So last question we'll end on here. So for any of our attorneys watching who have questions about their Medicaid state recovery program or are looking for resources, what are some good outlets that they can look for information in their state?
I would say reaching out to your local chapter of the National Academy of Elder Law Attorneys, NALA, is a really good place to start, or reaching out just to a NALA attorney. You can go to their website, www.naela.org, and find a NALA attorney in your area and reach out to them or to the organization, because they tend to have a lot of experience with it. You can reach out to your state agency if your state has communicative agencies. You can reach out usually to your Medicaid Estate Recovery Program contractor. Texas's contractor is HMS Inc. They have a really friendly staff who's really wonderful to work with. They're not unreasonable. And so we can pick up the phone and call them and say, hey, I don't understand how this is going. Why are we doing this? What are we doing about this? How is this working? And so you can reach out to those people, but the NALA people tend to be really helpful. You can also take a look at your state's Medicaid program, because your state's Medicaid program rules themselves will tell you how it's supposed to operate.
Perfect. Okay. Those are some really great resources that we can certainly recommend as well. Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Jennifer, for being with us today and for sharing this information with our viewers. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Alyssa. It was lovely.